On this episode of China Unscripted, we talk to YouTube celebrities LaoY86 and SerpentZA about how China's changed, getting interrogated by the Chinese military, and a narrow escape through Hong Kong. Hi, welcome to the China Unscripted podcast. I'm Chris Chappell.
I'm Shelley Zhang.
And I'm Matt Ganeshda.
Gosh, look at us. We're being filmed on camera if you're watching on YouTube.
Are we going to keep doing this?
I don't know.
It's a lot of work to set it up.
Not for me, it isn't.
Oh, yeah. It's not your living room, Chris.
This is true. So I will continue to relax and kick back with a cup of tea. We're drinking tea from our sponsors, Path of Cha. Tonight we're drinking... Is this racist? We're drinking Yellow Goddess Huang Guanyin Wui Rock Oolong Tea. Shelley, has anyone ever called you Yellow Goddess?
Not until now.
I didn't call you that. I asked you
if
somebody had.
No.
Get ready for a lot of comments in the comment section. Boy. We're off to a terrible start.
It is, in Chinese, it doesn't sound as weird. Like, Asian people don't really call themselves yellow so much in English, but in Chinese, it doesn't sound as odd.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
All right. Well, all right. Cheers, guys. Cheers to the yellow goddess inside all of us. Set her free.
Well, it's Guan Ying, so goddess of mercy.
Oh, yeah. This is a nice wui. It has the distinctive wui rock taste. So that's like it's very mountainous, steep, rocky areas where it's grown. So it has this family of wui. Cliff teas has this kind of roasty, rocky kind of flavor.
The flavor of mercy?
Is it the flavor of rocks or the flavor of how they roast it?
No. It's a flavor of roasted rocks.
Okay, no. Because you said it was all because they were wui cliff teas, but is that...
Because of the terrain in which this kind of tea is grown, it lends a distinctive flavor similar to this.
Okay.
So like all the other wee cliffs, like, if you ever actually found like a big red robe, a Dahong Pao, a Shui Xian, it would have a wee cliff Shui Xian. There are other types. It would have a similar, you would recognize this as the same family of flavors.
I feel like now we need to start a podcast where Chris just talks about tea.
Oh boy.
Let's not.
Well, hey, I'm really excited for today's podcast. You know why?
Why, Chris?
Laowai? Was it going to be a Laowai joke?
It wasn't going to be a Laowai joke. Really, Matt, you know the answer because we all set this up together. This isn't a surprise to any of us.
No, I mean, it's in the intro, so.
That's right.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've been looking forward to this for a long time. I mean, our guests today are people that have been covering China for more than a decade, and
coming from actually inside China, the closest we've ever gotten on the show was the South China Sea and Taiwan and Hong Kong.
Jinmen,
yeah, hey, that was only like what, a couple feet away from.
It was less than 2 miles from the border across the water there.
Yeah. There you go.
We could swim to China.
Let's not.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Well, they're on the call, probably wanting to get on. So. Joining us today are China YouTube celebrities Matthew Tai from the channel LaoY86 and Winston Sturzel, a.k.a. SerpentZA. And they also have a YouTube show together they do called ADV China. Thanks for joining us, guys.
Thank you for having us on.
Absolute pleasure. It's interesting that finally our paths meet.
Yeah, after all of these years. How long have you guys been doing your shows?
Wow, I think it's been 12 years for me now.
ADV China, we started collabing for about 5 years, so my channel's about 7 years old.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I know you guys, you two have done something I certainly never would have attempted, you know, making a YouTube show in mainland China. So how did you get started?
Well, to be honest, turns out I'm actually the first person to ever make YouTube videos out of mainland China, and this is just by chance. Uh-huh. When I first got there, YouTube wasn't actually a thing yet. It was only just starting up. So I was in China and a lot of people were contacting me, especially friends and family, asking me, you know, why are you there? Isn't it like an oppressive gulag where they just arrest you for looking at someone strange, you know? And at the time, I was having the time of my life. You know, China is a very exciting and interesting place, especially if you're fresh off the boat. So I wanted to make some videos to kind of debunk some of these myths and show people just what life was like in China. So the easiest way was to make YouTube videos, and so I could tell my friends and family to check it out. But people started to watch them, and they started to ask me questions, you know, what's it like to date a Chinese girl? What's it like to rent an apartment? Things like that. So I had a lot to talk about, and it just grew from there, really.
It's pretty much the same story on my end. I was living in Inner Mongolia, which is also in mainland China. And I just found that so many people were worried about me, especially like parents and things like that. And again, I just said, you know, why not make videos about it to show them I'm okay? But it kind of transpired into something very different,
yeah,
obviously.
Yeah, the irony is the illusion I was trying to dispel about China is actually what China ended up becoming in the end.
Right. That's not to say in the beginning it didn't have its issues, but it was much, much better in the beginning. I mean, when I started YouTube, I could already speak Chinese. It wasn't like I was deluded into, you know, not knowing about these things. But at the same time, it just got so much worse later on, especially for a media creator.
Also, don't forget, when I started doing YouTube, it wasn't yet blocked in China.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons why I solidified myself in the top spot, basically, as being the first China YouTuber is they very quickly blocked YouTube. But I have an IT background, so I knew how to bypass the firewall with like homemade VPNs that I would set up on servers around the world. So I could keep uploading when nobody else could. So that's why my videos just kept coming. And yeah, that's pretty much the story there.
And to cap that whole story off, we met through YouTube, obviously.
Yep.
We were pretty much the only two YouTubers doing videos in China. A lot of questions. And we were both interested in motorcycles. So that's how we ended up creating ADV China, which is our moto talk show on two wheels.
Yeah. I one more thing to add to that. You know, I was very conscious of the risk of making YouTube videos the entire time, especially since China has some very gray areas and some very strict laws about journalism. You're not allowed to just go into China and do journalism. You need a special permit. You need a journalism visa, and they have minders to look after you and stuff.
Especially interviewing people.
Yeah, of course. So that's why I just tried to stay away from anything political or anything that could be, you know, seen as being negative and so on, because I knew that if I crossed a certain line, that I'd have the wrong kind of attention pointed my way.
And those are the lines that we ended up crossing unintentionally just because of the restrictions that kind of came in later.
Yeah,
I would imagine things like vlogging is a very gray area considering the stance the Chinese Communist Party has on journalism.
Correct. Right, and that's why you'll see so many people using self-preservation tactics if they're making videos out of China. You're not going to see pretty much anything critical coming out of mainland China on YouTube.
Yeah.
I mean, at the same time, live streaming has become such a big thing inside China itself. And that happened while you guys were there, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Did you ever try doing any live streaming on Chinese live stream networks?
I did. I actually did. I think I did a 3-video series where we tried. We tried doing all the things that they had banned, like eating bananas and cucumbers. And actually, we stayed up. They didn't censor us. But eventually, they changed the rules so that you needed to register your Chinese ID if you wanted to stream on a Chinese platform. So that's when I just gave up on the idea anyway.
Yeah, very few foreigners actually are allowed to legally live stream.
2 or 3 agents.
You can kind of start out, but you'll get shut down almost immediately, and you need to go through a special agent or something like that in order to do it. It's very closely guarded.
What do you think the reason?
Well, it's pretty obvious the reason is they can't control what the foreigners are going to say.
Yeah, it's one thing if you have like a Weibo blog where you're typing about stuff, and they can actually have a censor board where they go through the material and get rid of it if it's, you know, offensive to the CCP. But if you're live streaming, it's like this unfettered stream of things that they can't actually control.
You know, a lot of Chinese live streamers do get very risque, but we actually see some very harsh penalties. Remember the young girl who sang the national anthem in like a funny way, and she got all her media shut down and she got detained and, you know, all that stuff.
She's only 16.
Yeah. So, you know, this happens. But because they know that there are very solid repercussions for Chinese citizens, you know, because when you sign up for these services, you use your national ID card. They know who you are. They know where you are. So if you step out of line, it's very easy for them to stop you. But as a foreigner, it's a lot harder for them to stop you. So that's why.
And so you said this has gotten worse over the years?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to directly attribute it to, you know, Xi Jinping coming into power, but we saw a very, very palpable change on the way they dealt with people doing the most basic of media, especially when we started filming our documentaries, Conquering Southern China and Conquering Northern China.
Yeah.
So when we did Conquering Southern China, it was early days in Xi Jinping's rule.
Yeah.
We did face a lot of...
That was 2015, right?
Yes, right.
2015 is, yeah, when we did it. Yeah.
So, you know, we noticed that there was a lot of pushback in comparison to us just riding around putting GoPros on. There was a lot of, like, stumbling blocks, but we really, really noticed it when we did Conquering Northern China, just the amount of unbelievable nonsense that happened to us with PLA questioning us and detaining us and all this kind of crap. Like, we were followed in different areas, and it just got very real to us that they know who we are, and even though we're only 100% covering positive things. Yes. Keep this in mind, we were only covering positive things in China. People were following us around. We had detectives and police trying to question us, go through our stuff. And we realized this is a different vibe than it was when we first got here.
Yeah, I mean, we had a SWAT team bust into our hotel rooms, separate us, individually interrogate us, take our Chinese driver and individually interrogate him too for something like 3 or 4 hours. And they brought in investigators. They brought in the head
from Beijing.
They brought in the head of the party for the area. It was very harrowing.
The most harrowing thing, and what really solidified it for me, was when I overheard the detective and the chief investigator in the hallway pinpointing exact details about Winston and I, where I had worked, where my last contract was, where I usually shop, your wife's name.
Sure.
It was crazy. Yeah. And we're 2,000 miles away from where we live.
We were in Mongolia at the time. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I was wondering if this was a case where it was just local officials getting nervous about, you know, two foreigners coming in, but it sounds like they knew who you were.
Yeah, I mean, the first time I mentioned conquering Southern China, we would go into a village that we don't know anything about. And if we start talking to locals and stuff, we notice the cops would start harassing us because it was in a place that foreigners aren't supposed to see. Maybe it's a minority region that had some unrest in the past that we have no idea about. We're not actually covering that.
Sure.
We're like, oh, look at this food. Look at the scenery. But the second time was when we realized it wasn't local officials anymore. It was actual top Beijing officials that knew everything about us.
There absolutely is a backstory to that, though, and it's fairly long. And if you've got time, we can tell you a little bit more about that if you want.
Well, that sounds like an interesting story, but I'm sure no one wants to hear it. So let's move on. No, please tell us. That.
Okay, I'll try to summarize this very quickly. When we were setting up, we're doing all the fixing for conquering northern China. We obviously were going to go into Inner Mongolia, and we wanted to visit different tribes and go and see them, you know, doing their camel herding and the horse milking and all the stuff they do there, which is quite fascinating, actually. So we got a hold of a guy who's a Mongolian. In fact, Simul, you got a hold of him, right?
Yep, that's right.
So he said that he's going to go visit the tribes, which he does every year, and he'd be more than happy to take us along.
He was lovely.
Yeah, lovely guy. Thing is, our producers are British, and they don't speak Chinese like we do. So they couldn't really communicate with this guy. So what they did was they asked him if he knew someone who could speak English and act as a translator. And one of his friends in Beijing could do this. Unbeknownst to all of us, this guy that they used as a translator is like a raging nationalist, like completely off the charts.
He's also in the CCP.
Yeah.
Han Chinese as well.
So anyway, the thing is, everything was going smoothly. We'd set everything up. We'd paid for their plane tickets to fly into Inner Mongolia to meet us. And we were going to all ride out together. And we had a follow car that we'd hired and everything. Mm-hmm. So we're going to go do this. Anyway, the night before they're supposed to arrive, we get a message from the English-speaking guy saying, oh, sorry, their flight's been canceled. So we're like, okay, fine. We'll just book you another flight because we checked and all the flights are fine. There's no, like, reason.
Cancellation.
So then after he refused the second time, he eventually said, look, we've decided we're not going to help you anymore because we've seen some of your videos and we don't agree with what you do. Now, this is way back, way, way back, right, when we did this. And we didn't have anything particularly negative, but what's been happening for a long time now is people will download our ADV China videos, upload them onto Bilibili or Weibo or whatever.
Youku at the time.
Yeah. And they'll put up subtitles. They'll purposefully mistranslate what we say to make it look like we're saying very terrible things about China. And so he'd seen some of these translated videos, and he was like, we're not going to help these guys. So we pleaded with him. We said, listen, we're definitely not. That's not our mission. We want to show the culture of China. We want to show people how beautiful China is.
And keep in mind, he's seen the first documentary.
Yeah, he knows.
Which is fully positive.
Of course. And you've really dropped the ball and left us hanging here. Do you mind at least giving us the addresses of these places so we can go and see them ourselves? So he's begrudgingly said, okay, fine. And he sent us the the address is very vague. It's like, go 5 kilometers down a dirt road and you'll see something.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we thought, okay, fine. It sucks that we can't have the guy with us, but we'll just do it ourselves.
Mm.
Anyway, we finally end up at the first little tribe of these Inner Mongolians, and they just don't want to talk to us. And we couldn't understand why they won't talk to us. And we were very, like, you know, taken aback. After a long time of trying our best, eventually we figured out this guy had phoned ahead to that tribe to say that these foreigners are going to come there, and their whole mission is to make fun of you, make fun of your culture. They're going to film you and make the rest of the world laugh at you and all this kind of stuff. So they didn't want to talk to us because of this, right?
Wow.
So this was really, you know, a bit of a shock to us, of course. But after getting to know them, we showed them our first documentary on our phones so that they could see we're not there to make fun of them. We had a fantastic time. So we filmed the camels. We did all that stuff. Then there is one town and one town only that allows foreigners to stay in a hotel between that tribe and the next tribe. So this guy obviously knew that we would have to stop in that town. So we get to that town. We go to the one and only foreigner hotel, because, you know, in rural China, that's how it works. In the small towns and cities, usually you get somewhere foreigners just aren't allowed to stay, but you do get usually one in the area where there's one hotel where foreigners can stay. So we're in there and we're just busy copying our footage and doing our stuff. And like at 11:30 at night, that's when the SWAT team busted in our doors and interrogated us and all that. And they took photos of all our IDs and driver's licenses and all that kind of stuff, you see. Anyway, we kind of already gave you the gist of what happened there. But when they left, because they kept saying, who's paying you? Where is your website? Who's paying you? All this kind of stuff. Took down all the serial numbers of our cameras and everything. When they saw the drone, they flipped out. You know, that was even harder to explain. So it was incredibly hairy. We honestly thought that was it for us, that we were going to get detained, and we didn't know what was going to happen. But we kind of played it dumb. They kept asking to see the footage, and we showed them like the beautiful camel drone footage that we'd taken. And you see, we'd been kind of smart up to this point. Every time we'd reached a city, we would be using basically Xuanfeng, you know, the DHL of China, to send our hard drives back to Beijing. So we didn't have legacy footage. So we didn't have the footage that we'd been taking up until that point, only the previous day.
Mm-hmm.
So we had all the beautiful camels and stuff, and we didn't have anything else with us. So they kept looking at this footage and trying to find something wrong with it. They couldn't. And that's when the woman came over, and you overheard them talking about all the details about our wives and everything. And
I want to chime in something here. Yeah. Is after that all happened, I went back to my hotel room, and obviously we didn't sleep. We came up with an escape plan, basically.
Yeah.
But in that time, I just started remembering all the friends that I had made in Inner Mongolia. And I did remember meeting this very wealthy girl whose dad was in the government. So I called her in the middle of the night. And she basically asked where I was. I sent a Baidu GPS pinpoint. She called me back immediately after talking to her dad. And we were in a town on the Mongolian border that had a ton of separatist activity from Inner Mongolian people that didn't want to be a part of China. We had no idea about this. So there was a lot of paranoia in the air from these detectives.
Yeah.
They were like, holy shit, these journalists basically just showed up to cover this.
You know? And I mean, that would explain why there were posters all over the hotel saying, you know, don't engage in terrorism. And they've got like pictures of people making bombs and being kicked by the police.
And they're all in Mongolian script.
Yeah, it was kind of a crazy situation. So anyway, long story short, I decided that screw this, we're not sticking around, because we overheard them saying to each other in the hallway, let's go back to the office. We've got a VPN there. We're going to research this some more, and we're going to come back. So I told the guys, pack up all your crap. We're leaving before dawn. We're leaving at like 4 a.m. Get everything ready. So we did. 4 a.m, we're out of there, and we went off to the next place, which was the horse place.
It was quite far away.
Yeah, it was like, I don't know, like 100 kilometers or something. It was 150 kilometers. It was far away. So we get to this horse place, and again, we get there, and the guy doesn't want to talk to us because this damn nationalist guy has phoned ahead to say, these guys are going to come make fun of you. The difference is this guy was not old and frail like the camel people. This guy's like a young Mongolian. He's pulling out swords and stuff, and like, you're going to come to Chifu woman, you know, that kind
of
thing.
You're going to make fun of us. And he had hung up a Mao portrait in his yurt.
And we were like, come on, man. So we had to do the whole thing again to explain the situation.
Took hours.
Yeah. And finally, he's like, okay, fine. So we go out, we herd his horses, everything's going real well. And then the PLA turns up. They come in their, army trucks, and they all pile out, and they're like, all right, line up. And they want to check all our papers. obviously they're a bit disconnected, but they got the same directive. So they're questioning the Mongolian guys. They're questioning us.
They lined us up against the car to take our photo. And yeah. I had like a little bit of a smile because I was like, this is like, just ridiculous. They're like, don't smile.
Yeah, the guy went right up to him like, Biasha! You know, like yeah. It was really a real piece of crap. Anyway, the thing is, they did this really nasty thing, which I think they do on purpose, is they like kind of checked everything. They checked all our papers. They took all our photos. They piled back in the trucks, drove about like 1 meter, stopped the truck, all jumped back out, ran out, and they said, open up your car, take everything out of your car, open up all your bags, and they went through everything. I had to show them all this camel footage again. This is all we've done. Look at this beautiful camel footage. You know,
we told them our hard drives were Diemba. How do you say
Diemba. Yeah, like, you know, like a power brick. Power bank. Because we had those lacy external hard drives. We don't have one here, do we?
No.
But it's kind of looks rubberized, and it looks like a battery bank. So we had a bag full of these things. And like, just some things here. And I said, just a Diemba, you know? And it's got a USB cable. And they're like, show the USB cable, pretend to plug it in my phone. And they just left it alone, which was super lucky. Yeah. Anyway, again, after doing all this stuff, it obviously spoiled the whole mood. Now the Mongolian guys really don't trust us because the army's come to hassle.
Yeah, we just got them to calm down.
Yeah. So we kind of begrudgingly finished up what we had to do. We paid them some extra just to be like, listen, we're sorry for the hassle. And then we got out of there and we left. It didn't end there. We still got harassed by the military.
There's many stories.
There's more to this. But once we'd left Inner Mongolia or that area, we were finally out of the clutches of that damn Beijing nationalist translator guy who had sabotaged us the whole way.
And told them our whole route.
Yeah, exactly. So that's kind of how that happened.
Yeah.
Gosh. Well, I know you mentioned that they were saying your wives' names, and that was a big concern for you because both of your wives are Chinese, correct?
Absolutely.
That's right.
Yeah.
So how have you handled that?
I mean, that's the first thing that they go for. And this is not just to say the detective incidents. Mm-hmm. When we get harassed by like nationalists, and we're pretty convinced they're tied to the government in many ways, but when we get harassed by them, they'll actually call our wives' work. So my wife worked at a TV company and she was the executive sales manager. So they would call her top boss, like basically the top boss of this TV company, and then say, listen, your employee is a spy for the West.
Wow.
Her husband's American. She's a spy. We're going to take care of this if you don't. She can't work there anymore. And they actually fabricated like a 22 page report of all the details about her, everything about her, and actually sent it to her boss. Her boss calls her, and we're in America at this point, calls her in the middle of the night because of the time difference. And he says, listen, I don't know what the hell is going on. I know this is probably not true, but this is like from the top.
Yeah.
This is from the top. And that's the kind of like stuff we have to deal with on a daily basis. And we're really, really worried because we don't want our wives to be put in danger, right? Yeah. You got the same report.
Yeah, except for me, it was a little bit more scary because I'm still in China at this time. Mm. And the first thing that happened was, look, I'm just really lucky that I have a very, strong-willed, independent wife. And she's a really good woman. So she put up with this nonsense. But the first incident that happened was somebody actually came looking for her at her work. Mm. Now, she worked in a clinic, which is part of a bigger hospital group in Shenzhen, but they actually went to her main branch hospital, walked into the HR department, and had a printout from a video where she appeared with me together and was asking, does this woman work here? Does this woman work here? And somebody stupidly said, yeah, she works here, but didn't give the actual thing. So the guy started taking photos inside the HR and everything. Eventually, the security guard told him to delete this stuff and kicked him out. But that was the first attempt of one of these guys. And I fully believe he was just one of the nationalist guys trying to go in there and dox, you know, my wife. Mm-hmm. But that same thing that his wife received, my wife's boss received too. In fact, it resulted in her getting a disciplinary hearing where she actually had to go into the disciplinary board because this document claimed that she was a national security risk, that she was a traitor, that she was on purpose not treating her Chinese patients well, and that
spreading
she was
rumors.
Spreading rumors and spreading the her personal information of her Chinese patients, which she wasn't, of course. And she doesn't even have any foreign patients because she worked in a Chinese clinic. Mm. But, you know, this resulted in real world repercussions for her. And of course, her boss, they doxed the information of her boss. Like, this is his phone number. This is his email address on all these like anti-us forums that they have. They were like, phone him, harass him, send messages to him, tell him that this woman's a spy, et cetera, et cetera. So it was like a deluge of crap that she had to put up with. And, you know, to be honest, it's a difficult position to be in.
Mm.
And most people would just fold and say, you know what, I can't handle this. I don't want my family to be harassed like this. I'm walking away. The difference is, though, is that I don't respond in that way. Well, neither do you.
No.
But when somebody threatens my wife, I don't back down. It actually, it strengthens my resolve. And it makes me angry, and it makes me want to expose this cowardly behavior to the entire world.
There was a pivotal moment when this started happening. I mean, it did start when we were filming our documentary, but I just started to realize the absolute disconnect between the Chinese people versus the Chinese government.
Yep.
And this is what kind of instilled our inspiration to see how low government, cohorts, basically, will go to attack our innocent wives who've never even spoken about any topics.
Sure.
When we are merely criticizing the evil practices of the CCP and promoting the good bits of Chinese culture, they will never separate that. And I had this theory, you can be the most prejudiced person in the world. I feel like we've been very fair. Mm-hmm. All of our Chinese friends and family love us, obviously. And when we are in China, we realize that the people are very separate from the government,
absolutely,
like I said. So. Mm-hmm. It was this weird disconnect that I had, is that you can say, if you really wanted to, all the bad things in the world about Chinese people, if you really wanted to, but you won't get government attention until you start questioning the CCP.
Yeah.
That's how selfish the whole system is, right? They don't care about the other stuff. They only care if you're criticizing the CCP.
Yeah, the problem is, at that time, I honestly was not critical of the government at all.
Right.
And it was just because I was pointing out things in society that I wanted to change. Mm-hmm. Because when you've invested so much of your life, bear in mind, I lived in China for 14 and a half years, and being married to Chinese and having Chinese friends and family, you want society around you to change for the better, mm-hmm. for everyone that you care about. So I would point out the problems with society, and that's when things started to
And unfortunately, the society's ailments usually stem from the government.
Yeah.
You know, and its restrictions.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I was going to ask, if you guys had directly criticized the government at any point.
No, but when you start pointing out things that are related, so it's like, just a simple example, we ride motorcycles, so they would ban motorcycles completely, and then you still see people riding around on bikes. But when the government official comes into town, all the bikes are off. They're like hitting people with traffic cones and stealing people's motorcycles just to make the local official happy. When you see that kind of inaction, where it's completely unfettered, everyone's riding around, it's nuts, people are riding on sidewalks and stuff, and then all of a sudden it's cracked down on, and then it goes back to normal.
Sure.
You see that kind of inaction and this just the way the government works, and you're going to point it out, and that's what we did. So that's an immediate threat to them, even if we're just talking about really minute things like that.
Yeah, so it's the face culture, and if you make China lose face in any way, shape, or form, and I'm saying, the Chinese government and China, the country, they've unfortunately managed to meld the two together.
So you can't separate them.
In China, it's very difficult to separate the two. You can't say something bad about China with the Chinese government without insulting China, the country, and the people. And that's what they want. And it's a very difficult situation to be in, because you can love the people, but you say something about, hey, the pollution in China sucks, and everyone suddenly goes like, oh, you've personally attacked me and every
right.
Chinese person that ever lived, ever, for 5,000 years.
Because that's the directive the CCP uses.
Yeah, and it results in hate mobs forming around basically.
Yeah. I just think it's incredible, like, your story about going to Inner Mongolia, how much resources the Chinese Communist Party put into persecuting you guys and your wives. Like, the sheer cost of that to the Chinese government is probably 10 times what the actual cost of your documentary was to you guys.
Sure.
Absolutely. And it just shows you the allocation of resources and what's more important to the CCP. And it's just face.
It is. It's all about face and image. And, you know, the stupid thing is that our documentary is nothing but positive, good advertisement for China. If you've ever watched it, you'll see it's all about how awesome the Chinese culture and how diverse it is, and the food and the scenery and all that, you know?
Yeah. So,
I'm curious if you've ever had gotten approached by people, not necessarily in the government, but trying to persuade you to do more positive things about China.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's something that I can't remember who asked us that recently, but very, very much so. So much so, to the point where they don't even realize what we do now. Some of them will get like an order for their boss, and they'll be like, oh, these guys have a lot of followers. Can you come to Tibet and show how awesome Chinese development is in Tibet? And we're like, yo, did you watch our channel?
Yeah, exactly. It happens a lot where we get approached just via email saying, oh.
Even in person, remember at the LA premiere?
Yeah.
Someone from CCTV showed up in LA to ask us to do content.
Yeah, and they want to fly us for free to Yunnan or wherever and do travel, like, look how amazing it is kind of stuff. But, you know, I've been approached by actual government officials and also by undercover police and stuff before in the past. Mm. And I'm saying, like, way before my channel kind of went down the path it's going down now, there was a guy that actually made friends with me. And this is 2007, 2008, something like that. And he just walked up to me on the street one day and he was like, "Hey, you're a foreigner, blah, blah, blah," talking to me and all this. And then over the years, I got to know him better and better. And he eventually revealed to me that he was actually my minder, and he'd been told to make friends with me so he could keep an eye on me, you know, this kind of thing. And of course, the police phoned my wife's family and stuff to find out where I am at the moment, you know, and they phone around. And when I was living in China, they would visit me very often. And that's got more to do with my nationality, actually, than what I do on YouTube.
To clarify, though, I think a lot of people have this misconception that China's liberalized to the point where it doesn't have North Korea-level minders, but they do. So this is how it works. So I have relatives in the Chinese government, and they obviously had my best interests in mind. So they would tell me, listen, there's a minder. It's not a personal minder necessarily, but they're in charge of a certain group of foreigners that live in this city in this area. And their job is to make sure they know you're not doing anything bad. You're registered in your correct department.
So this happens to all foreigners.
This happens to all foreigners. Yeah. There's like departments for that.
Yeah.
It's like a branch of the PSB, which is the Public Security Bureau.
Yeah.
But it's alarming. Yeah. And when I found out that wasn't just like tinfoil hat stuff, that's when it became real.
Yeah, a lot of foreigners don't realize that this goes on because, well, let's be fair, most of the foreigners that go live in China, they will end up living in Shanghai or Beijing or one of the biggest cities. And because there are large foreign populations over there, they have a system in place which is very unobtrusive in order to keep track of what foreigners are doing. It's when you go to the smaller towns or if you have a crapper nationality that you get to see what it's really all about. You see, I have a South African passport. I'm a South African national. And when they see that, they're like, whoa, we got to check up on this guy, right? Because they have a thing against Africans. And you can talk to any African who's ever lived in China. We get harassed a lot. Of course, as soon as they see me and I'm not the typical African they're expecting, things usually change. But it doesn't stop them from coming in the middle of the night knocking on my door. Mm. And even right when I moved into China in 2006, within the first month of moving into my apartment, I had a whole bunch of policemen come knock on my door to come check up on me and take photos of my passport. I actually have photos of them because I was like, who are these people? And I took photos of the police, you know, checking me out. But they would very often come just to make sure all my papers were in order. And when I talked about this to my Canadian, American, you know, any other nationality from the developed world friends, they're like, you're paranoid. It's bullshit. That's never happened to me. I've been here in China for 5 years. I've never once had a visit. Well, you know, they all eventually do, and then they change their mind. They're like, hang on, he was right.
If we're on the topic of police visits, my latest one before I left China, I had police show up to my door very late at night, and they were concerned that I had flown a drone over my apartment building. Now, the stupid thing about that is I just took a cityscape video and included it in one of my videos on my channel. The same cityscape can be seen hundreds of times over on Youku or Bilibili from Chinese people flying drones. But because I was a foreigner doing it and they had figured that out, and obviously the minder told someone I have a YouTube channel, they went on there and found it and said, look, there's a military base on your drone shot. And I'm like, well, everyone takes a drone shot of the city. The fact there's a random military base in the middle of the city and it just happens to be a pinpoint on my video, you know, that you can see it if you squint your eyes, doesn't mean I'm trying to like take spy footage or whatever. Sure. And they're like, well, be more careful next time. And then basically they whispered as they went off, like, we have to come back and check this out. And I was like, oh my gosh.
I mean, you guys do have some great drone shots in your footage.
Thanks.
That's one of the things that I noticed when I watch a video. It's like, wow, what kind of drone do you use?
Well, you see, I was actually very lucky because I actually did some work for DJI and Tencent way back in the day. And so, you know, as we all know, DJI is the best drone maker in the world at the moment and they're cutting edge. So I got some very early access to their drones. I was one of the first people that was allowed to fly the Phantom 3, which is what I first did. And they lent one to me for a couple of weeks. Remember that time?
Yeah.
So back then, the drone laws were very relaxed. In fact, there were no drone laws.
No, there were none.
So I'd just go to the top of my building and fly it and get all this stuff, and I'd go around and fly the drones. I eventually got a Phantom 4, and I took a lot of footage with that. And that was my main drone that I took everything for. Then you got the Mavic, and we used that. And I also shot some stuff with the Spark. So it's a whole bunch of different drones. And it was really just timing. I've got a lot of good nighttime drone footage. I've got a lot of good daytime stuff. But now you're not allowed to fly drones at night there. You're not allowed to fly drones over the cities and places like that. So it was, I was just lucky to be there at the right time.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like all the laws or all the restrictions are just tightening and tightening as the years go by. Right?
Particularly if you're a foreigner.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I actually went to, there's this beautiful building, the Shimin Zhongxing, which is like the civic center in the middle of Shenzhen. It's this beautiful, interesting building. And I took my drone there and I saw some local Chinese people flying a drone there as well. So I was like, this is fine. They're flying a drone. I can fly a drone. I flew my drone up. I've got the shot still, luckily, but busy taking the shot. And this military guy shouted and came up to me and shouted like, bring it down now. I'm like, okay. So bring it down. And he radios and there's a whole bunch of them come around me and they start, you know, they don't know what to do. They don't really know. They're radioing their superiors to figure out what they're supposed to do about this foreigner who's just flown a drone near this government building. Even though it's just a beautiful building, it's not like a secret thing. It's not military or anything.
Center.
Yeah, it's civic center. So while they're doing all their arguing and stuff, a bunch of Chinese tourists walk past and ask them where the bathroom was. So they're busy talking to them. And I picked my drone up. I didn't look back and I just walked directly ahead. And I just kept walking and I kept walking. And I'm like, they're going to come after me. They're going to come after me. And I just kept going and they didn't come after me. And I'm like, yes. Okay. Never again.
No. Wow.
Yeah.
Hey, do people inside China, did they watch their show? Like, did people recognize you on the street?
Oh, yeah. Well, absolutely.
I would get recognized every single time before I left China. Every time I went out, every single time I'd go out for coffee, I'd get recognized. And this is the thing a lot of people don't seem to realize is that the Chinese people that watch my show generally support me. Everybody that walked up to me in public was very positive and said they love my videos. And I've got lots of clips of me taking photos with them and stuff. And there's this narrative going around that I'm some kind of anti-China, the antichrist of China on YouTube, and everyone hates me and stuff. But in reality, and even here in the States, we bump into Chinese and Asian people who watch our stuff. They really support what we do. There's a difference, though, is a lot of them, in fact, the majority of them, won't ever say that publicly because it's too dangerous to associate themselves with anyone who might criticize China at all. You know?
I would say our biggest fans are Chinese Americans that really resonate because they grew up in maybe Chinese families where their parents have different perspective on things than them. Yeah. And then also mainland Chinese people that just can't say anything about it. So it's almost like they watch our videos, agree with them, but they can never say that or criticize the CCP like we do within their own country. So yeah, sure. Tons of fans pull you off the street, be like, I love your videos so much, but they don't really want to be shown, obviously.
Sure. Well, you know, YouTube is banned in China, so any Chinese person watching your videos is a criminal.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. But don't forget that there's something else that happens in China, and has happened since I started making videos and you as well, is that people will, with VPNs, download our content and then upload it with subtitles or without subtitles on their own Bilibili and Youku stuff so they can make money. Because remember, copyright law doesn't really exist at all in China. So they do it with your show as well. We've seen it there too. They love to.
They've kind of cracked down on our content now.
It's actually quite funny though. If anyone tries to mention our name or upload a video with us in it, it gets immediately censored now. But before, they could make money off of our stuff. So they would download it and put it up. So everybody saw our videos on the Chinese internet.
The problem is like a lot of times that, like you said, they would put wrong subtitles up. So we could say like, look, it looks kind of dirty now, but they've really cleaned this area up compared to like 2 years ago. And then they put in the subtitles like, they said Chinese people are all dirty, right? We're like, come on, it was a huge PR problem for us. But then when basically, I think someone in the government basically banned our names from Bilibili, it just made everything clear up a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, it's way better.
Wow.
So thanks to censorship, people aren't ripping off your content.
In a weird way.
They don't have copyright laws, but the censorship sure cracks down on it.
There was the funniest thing ever. I think, what was it? It was like a Japanese porno movie or something where they specifically, to stop people copying it, they put on the label like Beijing Tiananmen Massacre 1989, it's Free Tibet and all that's on all the artwork. It's in the movie and like text in Chinese. So it can't be pirated in China. It's a great idea.
Yeah. We are not condoning anyone listening go watch this Japanese pornography.
No, for clarity.
It was clever. It
was very clever. Yeah.
So I'm curious, what was the moment where you guys decided like, okay, it's time to leave China?
It was very close to that last story I told you for me about when the cops showed up. That was right towards the end. There were some other things going on, just inklings. There was a period right before I left, basically, where the police stormed into a foreigner bar, like where foreigners go to. And I don't go to foreigner bars, so that was a bad move on their part. The reason they couldn't find me in my home is because I was registered at my last place of employment. So that's where the PSB, the Public Security Bureau, thought I lived. But actually, I had bought my own apartment with my wife, and it was in her name. So I never re-registered with the PSB. So they didn't actually know where to find me at that point when they were specifically looking for me. But they went into this bar with my picture, and they said, he was asking all the foreigners, where is he, where is he, where is he? And nobody really knew where I was. That was pretty much my deciding factor when I was like, the sequence of events were too close to each other. And I was like, this is enough. This is it for me.
I mean, it was that exact night.
It was that exact night.
That night, because I was there with him, and we're having a bunch of drinks and stuff, and you know what we usually do. And he was getting all these texts from all the other foreigners that, hey, look, the cops are looking for you. So we're like, listen, man, get your stuff together. And I drove him directly to the border, and he went
in Hong Kong. Yeah. And actually, real quick, when I was at the border with Hong Kong, this is what I was most worried about, was had the local authorities contacted bigger people up on the Shenzhen border with Hong Kong. So I went into the border. I was super nervous, but we'd like pep talk the entire car ride there. Yeah. Remember? Yeah, yeah. And I laid down in his car. I put my seat down because there's cameras all over the highway, basically. Sure. Yeah. Super paranoid, you know. Yeah. So I get to the border and I'm waiting in line. I'm kind of freaking out. I give my passport. Everything goes smoothly. It's like a young, nice guy. He doesn't care. He stamps me through. And I give him a little rating, a little happy face rating on the little rating thing at the customs. And then all of a sudden, a superior calls out to him. And then he goes, come here, come here. So I'm already through. I'm in that dead zone between Hong Kong and Shenzhen. And he goes, come here, come here. And I turn around and he goes, do you have a Chinese name? And I was like, no. And he goes, your name's not Tai Ma Xiu. That's my Chinese name. And I was like, oh, no, no. And he's like, okay. And he turns around. So I walk, I walk, I walk, I walk. And then this is right before I put my bag through the security check. I walk, 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 and I get tapped on the shoulder. I turn around, and there is a female Chinese police officer that says in perfect English, where are you going? And I said, I'm going to Hong Kong. And she goes, are you going to come back? And I said, yes. And I don't know why I said that. I was just like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And she goes, good. And then she turned around and walked away.
Good.
And I never went back. I never went back.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the first anyone's heard that
yeah,
story.
Yeah, I never broke that.
Oh,
yeah.
Cool.
I actually filmed the entire thing. I'm going to put it out at some point.
Was this last year or two? Like, how long ago was this?
It was a year and a half ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
For me, it was different. You know, obviously, he'd moved to the States. Mm. And our ADV China and our documentaries and all that stuff, it's an important part of what I do. And, you know, I'd started out with this little pikey little channel on YouTube, Serpents Today, and it'd grown pretty big. I mean, it's now at about 600 and something thousand subscribers. It's fairly big. But what we were doing together, I felt, was more important and more interesting, and I wanted us to keep doing that. Mm-hmm. And I realized, especially after the scare filming conquering northern China, that we couldn't base ourselves in China anymore. No. Because all it takes is us to upset the wrong person, and they would be able to come and raid our office or our homes and take all our hard drives and our computers and all that. And I was like, you know what? So we discussed this over a long time. How about we set something up in the States and we use it as a base? Then we can fly to Vietnam and
Taiwan
and India, wherever else, and keep doing what we do. And we don't need to worry about this Gestapo crap, you know? And so that's how we formulated this idea. So I worked towards it. And it was really difficult, trust me, as a South African, to get a visa to work in the States.
Yeah, it was a real mission.
It took like a year to get everything, you know, in order. So during that year, I was still in China. I shot my final documentary, Stay Awesome China, which is really good, but I was stressing the entire time. I knew that
the writing was on the wall.
I knew that, like, during the filming, and I filmed some very risque things, and they're like nude photographers and rap artists who are being, you know, suppressed by the government. I went a little edgy there, and I just knew that I could get detained. But basically, once that was done, it kind of, the timing all came together, and I kind of laid low for a couple months, and then I headed off to the States. And I realize now, as I'm sure everybody else does, is that for me to travel back to China would be a stupid mistake.
Suicide.
Because they would never let me out again.
No.
You know?
We'd both get exit banned. They let us in. That's for damn sure.
Yeah.
Do you know, Matt, what was it that triggered them to come after you that hard at first?
I think it was a culmination. I think it must have started well before that. I think people knew about my YouTube channel. We weren't getting that dicey on ADV China, but we were pointing out more things that were really bothering us.
I know what
us.
It was.
No. Let me finish the story.
Yeah, you go for it, but I know what it was.
So, yeah. So anyway, Anyway, we were in Concord, Northern China. And when I found out that they knew all that information about us, I was really, really concerned that that was going to get back to my small town, my small city. I say small city, it's like 5 million people. Mm-hmm. When I went back there, I knew that the communication network there is much tighter than a place like Shenzhen or Shanghai or Beijing.
Right.
And so that the information could get back to the PSB and they could actually target me for that. The drone thing happened, a bunch of things happened, and that was kind of, I don't know. I mean, I can't say one specific trigger event because I don't have any files, but I do have a WeChat photo of a circle that somebody got, that one of my friends got for me. It circles like the drone shot that I took, and then it says like, where does he live? We're looking for him and stuff like that. So I don't know.
Yeah, I won't give an exact time and date when this happened, but there was a very important Chinese government event happening.
Yeah.
And you went into Hong Kong and we were talking about freedom of speech and happened to film the Falun Gong posters.
Yeah, that also definitely has something to do with it.
You were like, look, this is what's nice about Hong Kong. You can have
I want to be very clear about this. It was so transparent what I did. There was the anti-Falun Gong people and then the pro-Falun Gong. And they were right next to each other. I thought that was fascinating because you walk right over the border. That would never happen in China.
No, you can't. But the fact that you showed that on your channel during that very sensitive, you know,
that government, was right around the same time.
Yeah, that sensitive government thing that was happening is probably why they were like, listen, you better shut this guy up.
It was multiple things, but that was probably one of them.
Yeah,
a big one.
That's my reasoning.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Well, I know since you guys have left China, I think you've expressed like some regrets about the way you covered China when you were in China. Do you want to talk at all about that?
Yeah. I think that in the beginning, it was more of a, I don't know how to explain, but when you put out videos where people are like, they just won't believe you. They're like, no, something's going on. You're definitely in trouble. Like, you should be worried about your safety. They don't have this and this and this. Like, why would you do this? You must be deluded. You're drinking the Kool-Aid. We weren't promoting the government. We were just showing what our daily life was. And I got to tell you, it's pretty drama-free for the most part. Mm. People live in China like normal people do everywhere. It's not until you get big enough or popular enough to actually create issues for the government. So the average person doesn't go through a lot of that. So again, I regret not being more transparent in the beginning, but at the same time, it was self-preservation in a way. You have to look out for yourself and your family and your friends. You can't point out those things until you just get so mad that you start doing so. So I wouldn't say I have any real regrets, but I do. I'm happy with me being more open about how I really felt in the end.
Sure. Well, I mean, for me, it was pure selfishness.
Yeah.
You know, when you're fresh off the boat, and it happens to everyone, you travel to a new country, everything's exciting and new and interesting, you know. Yeah. So you want to share the positives that you see. And then in China, as a foreigner like myself or any foreigner who goes there, you get special treatment. Mm-hmm. So because you're a white guy, you'll get invited to sit down and have free drinks and food. You know, you get a lot of attention from the women. I'm not going to lie, that's a huge draw. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're having this time of your life, and China is so blasé when it comes to the law. So you can walk around with a beer in your hand, getting drunk in the middle of the road. No one's going to stop
you. Were doing
right?
That.
Not that I was doing that very often anyway. But the thing is, you know, yeah. The thing is, you go out, you have a fantastic time, and you don't want the party to stop. So, you know, when you see the bad things around you, you do see it, but you try to ignore it as much as possible because you're having too much of a good time. And like I said, it's selfishness. You don't want, if you know that if you talk about that or if you focus on that, it's going to spoil your mood and it's going to cause you trouble. So you kind of just push it aside. But when you grow up, because bear in mind, when I went to China, I was 25 years
old.
And
22.
I don't think any 25-year-old in the world's got his head on straight, right?
No.
So, you know, you're living this big party, and then you realize as you mature that things have to change. And if you try to settle down like I did, I was there for so long, you realize that as a foreigner, it's impossible. You know, just to do simple things like buy a train ticket, you know, using those machines. You can't. You have to go online and you have to go stand in a queue. You have to be checked. Being able to have any kind of stability because every year the visa laws change and they've got some new stipulation. Oh, you're going to need different documents this year, or, oh, you're South African. You're no longer part of the native English speaking list that we have. So you can't get these kind of jobs anymore. You know, that kind of nonsense. They change all the time. So you don't have the stability in your life. You can't settle down. Buying property. Buying cars. I mean, I did buy my own car, but what a mission. Anything that usual people would do when they start to try and settle down, and the thought of having a child, things like that, I realized that these are the things that I didn't care about before, and I didn't realize how bad it was because I was just having a big party, and it was all selfishness. And when I got to that point, I realized, you know what? Enough of that shit. there are big issues that need to be talked about here, and I'm not going to ignore them anymore. And especially when people started to attack my wife and my family, I was like, you know what? I'm done making excuses for your bullshit, because I've been doing that this far, and I've been very nice and gracious, not to mention this crap that I've been seeing around me, because I know it's going to cause you to lose face. So I've been very nice and gracious, but if you're going to attack me like this, that's it. I'm done. I'm going to show this stuff for what it is. That's kind of where I went.
Yeah, I think the real key moment, I think you said it well, was when the selfishness kind of vanishes. It's when you grow up, but it's also when you have a life-changing event. So when I had my daughter in mainland China, it was like night and day for me. I was like, what did I actually just do? My daughter should not be growing up in this environment. Just the park where she used to play in. Five children have been kidnapped there from kidnapping gangs.
Oh my God.
You don't come from America, where I had it pretty good growing up, you know, middle class society. You don't go from that and then give your own kid a severe disadvantage in safety, in education, in potential brainwashing through the system. It makes you wake up real quick.
That the fake vaccine thing happened.
Yeah, to my daughter.
Yeah.
So that was during that scandal.
It's interesting, yeah. Matt, because, you know, in one of your videos about leaving China, you talked about, like, you know, inside China, you know, every year there's just constant development and you see all these amazing things, and you go back to your hometown in America and it's like everything is stagnant and the shops, you know, are closed and businesses aren't doing that well. And like, despite all this, you still want to raise your daughter in America.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think in the end of that video, I clearly pointed out all of the culmination of all the negativity, the negative things that happened to me, and that kind of moment where I woke up. But yeah, absolutely. You go to China where everything is exciting and happening and booming. And it's just so interesting when you're a young 20-something year old. But when you do have that pivotal moment where you have another life on your hands and, you know, your wife's security and safety is in danger, everything changes and you realize it for what it is.
Yeah. And also that stagnant thing that he was talking about. I mean, that's stability at the end of the day,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Did you say that your daughter got one of the fake vaccines?
So my daughter tested her antibodies and she didn't, but the fake vaccine scandal happened at the exact same time that she got her vaccines. So we were freaking out. There was no way of us to know if that actually happened. And there were people in our city that had received the fake vaccines.
Oh my God. Yeah.
So that was enough.
You know, I know the World Health Organization really promotes China as a vaccine.
What heroes?
Don't
what
get me started
heroes.
On those sellouts. I can't stand them. I have a vendetta against them right now.
Oh,
me
my
too.
Gosh. Did you see that recent video of the interview with the Hong Kong media?
Yeah, that was just, it's like, can you guys try a little harder? Did you actually say, oh, I couldn't hear you there? It would have been much better if they're just like, oh, we're not allowed to talk about that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, our masters don't allow us.
Yeah. Master said no.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. That would have been better. Master master told me no.
Exactly.
Jeez. Okay, so what would you say to a foreigner thinking about going to China now?
You can't.
Yeah, well, literally,
well, I mean,
you actually
yes.
can.
Okay. Coronavirus aside.
Okay. For tourism, I'd say fine. I mean, go for your little trip or whatever. I don't think anyone's in immediate danger as long as you're not a high profile figure, as long as you're not making mass amounts of social media and have a large following or commentating on China, period. But to live there, I would say absolutely not. Not now. Not now. It's not like the old days.
It's not. But look, I have to give this advice to people quite often, because a lot of people started to watch my videos because they had an interest in going to China. Hmm. And I've had to change my story over the years. And my recent version of the story is, you know what? China's still an adventure. If this coronavirus aside and this anti-foreigner sort of rhetoric that's going on aside, you could still have a fantastic adventure. Yeah. Go for a gap year, you know, go and do some English teaching or go and study something there or whatever for just about a year. But don't ever think you can make it a long-term thing, because you'll actually be wasting your efforts and your life. Because I've got multiple people that I know personally who, for instance, I got a friend who went to Taiwan, I got a friend who went to Japan, more or less the same time I went to China. They are married, they have permanent residence, they have houses, they have citizenship, they have the passports. I have pretty much nothing, because China does not give anything to foreigners. Mm. You cannot get a Chinese passport. You cannot become a resident. You walk away as a long-term tourist, basically.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. You'll never be accepted into society either.
Yeah. So go there for an extended holiday, a gap year, and an adventure, but don't go there with the idea that it's going to be a long-term thing.
Mm. And don't take any drone shots.
Yes,
don't take any drones. Not now.
And you got to be super careful. It's weird because it comes in waves. And it's happened a few times while I was in China where things became very sensitive. Around the 2008 Olympics, you know, whenever America's doing one of those freedom exercises through the South Pacific Sea or whatever it's called, the South China Sea, everyone else except for China's sea. You know, whenever they do that, you get this big sort of ramp up of anti-foreign angst around. And people get very unfriendly and it's not fun. But it does die down and everything goes back to normal. And then whenever they need to have another excuse to divert attention away from the mistakes of the CCP, they blame foreigners again. And then it ramps up.
But I mean, the anti-West rhetoric and the pro-nationalism rhetoric, it's gotten much more vocal. It's not like a private opinion anymore. And it's kind of like a boiled frog syndrome. If you spend a lot of time there, you just see it get worse.
Yeah. You know what was really funny? It was when this was a while ago, when there was a big exercise in the South China Sea. And everyone was boycotting American goods in China. And I had an Apple laptop and I took it in for repair. And I went to a little repair shop that only specializes in Apple. So I go up there, I'm like, hey, do you have some parts for this? And they all stood up in unison and they said, you know, are you American? You know, Nishime Gorima. I'm like, no. And they're like, good. And they said, look in our trash bin. They'd broken all their iPhones, broken all their iPads, thrown all their like Apple stuff in there. And they were like swearing about Americans and we hate Americans and all this crap. And I'm like, okay, that's cool. Thanks. Went away. Probably about a month later, I went back to the same shop. They've all got new iPhones, new iPads, which they've had to buy with their own money because they're stupid.
What's funny is that you never know, depending on where you come from, you never know what nationality you should say you are if you're speaking Chinese to people that are getting in your face, because sometimes it's good to be American.
Yeah.
But then we were in Harbin that one time and he's like, any of you guys American? This massive dude. He's like, any of you guys American? We had cameras up and we're all like, no. And he's like, good. Because if any of you were American, you'd be dead.
Oh, wow.
I'm like, okay. And then sometimes it's really bad to be Canadian. It's usually good to be Canadian. Now it's really bad.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Rip that like badge or patch off your backpack and put an American one on there instead of that.
Yeah, keep your ear to the ground and find out which nationalities, you know, bad.
Flavor of the week,
Sometimes it's French people, you know. It just depends.
I think it's good to be Serbian. Right now.
Yes, probably. Province of China at this point.
I was gonna ask if you've seen like the long-term trend with this go negative towards foreigners, but you're saying it seems more cyclical than anything.
It's cyclical, but it's worse now.
Yeah.
So because the Chinese government's really promoting this idea of China first. So it didn't used to be like, it used to be like an event that would trigger this. And like you said, cyclical, but now it's more like it's permanently in the psyche that we keep getting shit on, for lack of better words. The West keeps shitting on us Chinese people. So we need to kind of band together. The future is going to be really rough. It's going to be an arduous march. You know, we need to be careful. We need to be very wary of the West. And it's become a more permanent thing.
Yeah.
Well, do you get a sense that people in China, like we hear different things. Do people buy into this or do people kind of know? Are people dissatisfied with the Chinese Communist Party?
It's very tough to say because the way society is the older people, so people that are my parents-in-law age, you know, people in their 50s and 60s and so on, they tend to just swallow up anything the government says because it's their only source of information and has been their entire life. So they'll read the...
It's comfortable.
Yeah, they'll read the Chinese newspaper every day and watch TV. And remember, the news comes from one source only.
Yeah.
So they get this and they trust what's being said and they kind of go along with it. And every time there's a victory for China in some way, like the economy gets stronger, they see it as their own personal victory.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll be like, yes, us Chinese are strong, our economy is great and blah, blah, blah. And then they also get very offended whenever they're told to be offended. Oh, you know, America is trying to fight us in a trade war. So then they're like, why do Americans want to hurt us so much? You know, so it's those people are beyond reproach. You can't do anything with them. You cannot change their mind. It's impossible. It's ingrained. The younger people, however, there are plenty of them that are switched on, sophisticated, and have their own thoughts when it comes to, you know, politics around the world.
So in conversation with them, you'll get a real opinion from them, maybe something that's quite critical to the government. But
It's
never in public. It's not even necessarily with their own Chinese friends.
Yeah.
I would say my wife's generation, so she's born 1986, same as me. They are probably the most open-minded generation because they didn't grow up where this like massive pro-Mao, pro-communism approach in the education system happened. They had a lot of that, but nothing like they did in the previous generation, the lost generation.
Nothing like they're having now.
Now, you're getting really, really slick propaganda, soft power, really injected into the education system of the youth. So, you know, everything that my wife grew up watching anime and American cartoons on TV because they weren't even blocked, right? Yeah. But nowadays, it's purely Chinese media. And a lot of the kids, they just have no incentive to even use a VPN or see what's outside of that anyway. You know, it's just been made so convenient for them today just to be nationalist, to be proud.
Yeah, you know, that's probably the biggest change I saw, and also a big reason why I did change my tune, other than, you know, letting go of the selfishness, was when I got to China, China was still in this big sort of open arm embrace where they were embracing the West. And they were like, you know what, you guys are helping us out of this situation. We look up to Western democracies, or at least Western societies, not democracy, wrong one. We like Western goods. We like Western TV. Yeah. We like, you know, capitalism. Obviously, we all want to have a car. We all, you know, and because of that, it's a very friendly atmosphere. And most people were all about like, hey, foreign friend, you know, let's do
money
things
first.
Together. Yeah, obviously. But that's kind of changed. And now it's, hey, you know what? Why are you foreigners always trying to keep us down? You know, it's now it's like, China, we're stronger. Look what we had to struggle through, all your prejudice and all your nonsense. And so why are you trying to keep us down? So, you know, the whole sort of zeitgeist and attitude has changed in China on the streets.
And it's directly related to the boom period that we were there in. If there's nothing to complain about and everyone's getting a more bigger and bigger salary, everyone's buying all the stuff they've never had in their entire life, getting their first car, like you said.
Yeah, getting their first Apple iPhone.
They're not going to criticize the government. They're not going to start pointing out fallacies. But when things start taking a slight downturn, the stock market crashes, you know, prices go up crazily for food and everything, gas, all this kind of stuff. Then people start to question things.
Yeah.
And the CCP has to lock down. They have to crack down. And that's what changes the whole zeitgeist of how foreigners are looked at around the West is looked at.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, what do you guys think about how, especially with the coronavirus, it seems we're beginning to see the real influence China has around the world, like with the World Health Organization, or even how you have major Western media repeating China's numbers about the coronavirus, praising China's model. What do you guys think about that?
I think the world has gone absolutely batshit crazy, to be, you know, frank. I don't
ironic
understand
choice of why. Words.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, ironic choice. I actually don't know what's wrong with people that they can't see through this. It's very transparent. And maybe it's only because I lived there so long and I got to know the situation well. And maybe also because of my background of growing up in South Africa, you get to see through this kind of political, and especially when race is involved, you get to see through all that crap and see for what it really is. And I get it. I mean, China is incredibly good at manipulating the West. They understand how the West works, and they know how to play the race card specifically, which they've been doing a lot lately. They know how to play the victimhood card, and they use that to their advantage. And unfortunately, the way the whole Western world is at the moment is they can't help but go along with that because they're too afraid to go against it, if that makes any sense.
Oh, and again, you said that when the government paired itself with the Chinese identity, it made it impossible to separate. And that's how the government portrays itself. It is the Chinese people.
Yeah.
And
no, you go ahead.
Okay. So the issue that I have with that is that in Western society, when you do citations and look at sources and have to come up with official data and information, that's all the West has because that's actually how Western education works, right? So when China puts out fake data, China's laughing all the way to the bank. They don't care, right? Sure. They're like, okay, people are going to eat this up. And that's all that mass media can actually use, right? Yeah. Without being a conspiracy theorist or something.
One thing that people never seem to be able to differentiate between is the term Huaren and Zhongguoren. Mm. You know, a Zhongguoren is a Chinese person, a mainland Chinese national. Huaren is ethnically Chinese. So you can be from Taiwan or Singapore or wherever, you know, but you're ethnically Chinese. You're a Huaren. You are not a Zhongguoren. But in English, we only have one word, which is Chinese. Mm. So you say he's Chinese. And if you say that to someone from Taiwan, they probably get quite offended at you, you know, for saying that instead of saying he's Taiwanese. But from an ethnicity point of view, Huaren, you know, Chinese is a good thing, and it doesn't matter where you're from. But, you know, there's a big differentiation. So if I say, like, for instance, don't buy Chinese products, I'm talking about mainland China, not talking about, you know, Chinese ethnic people from everywhere else. So it's not actually a race thing. It's more a nationality thing, if that makes sense.
And the CCP has done a great job, again, taking advantage of Western sensibilities, I can say, by encapsulating everything related to Chinese history, Chinese products, Chinese identity, all of the countries and people around the world that have Chinese identity, they've fully encapsulated that into the CCP's umbrella.
Yeah, as if they all belong to the CCP. Look, right. There's been a whole lot of horrible sort of xenophobic and racially motivated attacks against Asians in the West, according to the news, right? And this is something that is happening. And the reason we hear it in the news is because society in the West condemns this kind of behavior. And because they condemn this kind of behavior, it is put in the news.
It's reported.
Every single time something happens, everyone gets outraged, and everyone, rightly so, is against it. However, these kind of incidents happening in China right now are happening in the thousands. You know, we both get personal messages and videos from people we know personally in China sending all this discrimination stuff. In fact, we're going to be talking about that later in the week.
Mm.
But none of that ever makes it into the media because in China, it's condoned by the state. They actually have mandates out there that say foreigners are not allowed into supermarkets or these kind of markets or whatever. And society also condones it. They've been told that foreigners
are not reprimanded.
Yeah, they're being told that foreigners are the ones bringing the disease into China now. And so foreigners, you should stay away from them. They shouldn't be allowed in, and so on and so forth. So society and, of course, the government is condoning these xenophobic and racist incidents. And so they're not going to make it into the news.
It's
a very unbalanced situation, but you will always see the Chinese government jump directly to that. Every time anyone brings up anything, they're like, look at all these terrible incidents happening against Chinese people overseas. Come on, guys, let's play it fair.
I mean,
yeah, it's self-perpetuating at this point. Yeah.
It's interesting that you talked about Huaren, actually, because the opposite of that is when they try to use Haiwai Huaren, like overseas Chinese, right, as the umbrella, no matter where you're from, right? You also belong to the Chinese Communist Party because you're a Chinese person. So, like, it's interesting that you were distinguishing between Zhongguoren and Huaren because they actually do the opposite of that in order to kind of bring all Chinese people, ethnically Chinese people, under that umbrella.
Right.
I mean, that's like German people saying if you're European, you're German. It doesn't make sense, right?
Well,
maybe a while ago.
Maybe to the Germans it makes sense.
Sure.
So what projects are you working on for the future?
We're going to go forward with our current content. Obviously, we're going to be kind of knee deep in this whole coronavirus nonsense for a while now.
Unfortunately, it's not by choice.
There's just so much information that we keep stumbling across, and we can't stand people buying into this soft power CCP bullshit right now. So we're going to continue talking about that. We have our podcasts on Thursdays where we do like a long form thing.
However, you know, here's the thing. We've been trying for the longest time to diversify away from China. We don't want that to be our main thing. So we've started a car related channel. Of course, all of our travels around the world that we're planning on doing. We want to still be able to comment on China and have it a big part of what we do, but we do try our best to diversify. It's just so difficult when it keeps drawing you back in with the attacks that we get and these weird forums that pop up on the Chinese internet, which give instructions on how to report us as spies and how to, you know, flag our videos on YouTube and et cetera. Click here, say this, type this, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And then you have all these comments of thousands of people. Yeah, I reported them. Ha ha ha, you know. And so it draws you back in all the time.
And also we want to see positive reform within China. It's something we deeply care about. And we're not going to stop doing it as long as that's on the table.
Sure.
Yeah, I think it's what we've found over the years is that everything has to do with China.
Yeah, unfortunately.
More and more, yeah.
I mean, come on, we're stuck in quarantine lockdown here in California because China.
I heard it was the U.S. military.
China.
That's pretty good.
Yeah,
we've seen it enough.
Yeah,
that's true. All right, well, thanks so much for joining us today, guys. It was great to finally get a chance to talk to you.
It was our pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely. Very nice to be on the show.
Definitely to anyone watching, I recommend you check out their channels. You know, Matt's YouTube channel is Laowai86, and Winston's channel is SerpentZA. That Z is a Z for you Americans. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And obviously, ADV China.
So that's right.
Great. Well, yeah, great talking to you guys.
Thank you, Chris. You too. Thank you, Shelley. Thank you, Matt.
Stay awesome.
You too. Well, that was great. I'm glad we finally got those guys on the show.
It was a lot of fun.
Some crazy stories that made me really glad that we never attempted to do China Uncensored from inside China.
Yeah, that would have been China Censored, most likely.
It would have just been Chris in a black jail, I believe.
Would they have let me film that, Matt?
No, probably not.
So then this joke you've made, it really isn't established on a logical premise.
Like most of my jokes, Chris, it wasn't funny.
Cheers to that.
Wait, what? let's wrap this up.
Gosh, the quarantine is really getting to us. It's just been the three of us living here. It's like Big Brother.
Remember when we all lived in Hong Kong for...
In that hotel for like a month?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hey, it's not so bad staying with the Yellow Goddess. Mm-hmm. Speaking of, if you want to enjoy some delicious tea, go to go.pathofcha.com/unscripted. Buy some tea and you'll support the show. Thanks for listening. Once again, I'm Chris Chappell.
I'm Shelley Zhang.
And I'm Matt Ganeshta.
We'll talk to you next time.